So tonight I'm just going over some various passages, but it's a real theme-oriented message, okay? So it's not so much that we're going to stay in one part in your Bible. I call this message the dream killer because, like I'm talking about when I was young, there's so many times we have amazing dreams of what God wants to do in our life or what we think God can do in our life, but there's things that get in the way, and there's so many things, and I know Peter has just shared with you so much stuff doctrinally of what gets in our way of growing in faith and things of that nature. And tonight I want to touch on just one area, one topic really, and that's the dream killer of people pleasing. Okay, doesn't seem like a big deal, but it's a big deal. We're going to see that God talks about this subject quite a bit. In the book of Proverbs 29, you guys can flip there if you want, and I'll just read to you this passage. I'm going to read it first from the New King James Version, and then I'll read it from another version as well. It's a famous proverb. You guys have heard this one many, many, many times. It says, "The fear of man brings a snare, but whoever trusts in the Lord shall be safe." And I like another version of it. It's kind of cool. It says, "It is dangerous to be concerned with what others think of you." It's dangerous to be concerned with what others think of you, but you're to trust the Lord and you'll be safe. Have you ever contemplated how much time you've spend thinking about how much you're concerned about, you know, what others think of you? I know for me, it's been a big deal, man. Huge deal. And I'll share some of that with you guys. In the book of the New Testament, if we flipped over to the New Testament, and I read another passage from the book of Galatians, chapter 1, verse 10, and I'm going to read it from another version. It says, "I'm not trying to be a people pleaser." This is the writer. He's saying, "I'm not trying to be a people pleaser. No, I'm trying to please God. If I were still trying to please people, I would not be a Christ servant." And so he kind of says that, hey, there's something that happened to me when I came to Christ. I now started focusing on pleasing God and not so much on pleasing people. And so pleasing God should always be a mark of our Christian life. Something that we're always moving in that direction, you know. That's easy to say for me at the age of 45, because you know what? I'm not where you guys are at anymore. I hate to say it, you know. I sometimes wish I were, but I'm not there, you know. I've been married now almost 25 years. I'm not looking to land a chick anymore. I don't go out to the raves anymore and look at all the beautiful women and be like, this is awesome. I don't hang out at Santa Monica clubs. Every now and then I get on YouTube though, and I listen to DJ Doc Martin spinning at Citrusonic or More. Those are clubs I used to go to, and they have them online. It's so cool. You can actually look up the club I used to go to, and they have the DJs spinning. I guess they recorded them back then. I had no clue, you know? So it's like me and Syl will be in the car, we'll just be all bumping it on our Bluetooth, we'll be like, whoa, dude, this is awesome. Some deep house stuff, just and we're like, whoa, we were there. That's where we hung out and, you know, things like that. And so it's kind of cool for us, you know, but I'm not there anymore to where I'm like, hey, did I go buy clobber gear? Do I wear fresh jive gear? You know, do I wear these different things? I still somewhat have stuck to the same stuff in overall relatively in my age, where I still, you know, I have pictures of me on my refrigerator with Vans on when I was like 10. You know, so some things have always stayed the same, but I don't go shopping anymore and go, man, I need to get like that shirt, or, you know, I don't find that in me anymore. There's no like, I don't know what my identity is anymore in the culture. You know, I've kind of lost it. And I think the older you get, you know, you kind of lose some of those things. Coming from Southern California, we fall into a trap so much in that area of that it's a huge lie that the way you get happy in life is through other people liking you. And it becomes so big where it's like your body has to look a certain way. So, you know, as a kid, I'd go to Venice Beach, and I'd be walking on Venice Beach, and, you know, and Venice Beach was awesome, dude. You saw people with turbans on playing the guitar, rollerblading. You saw the one-man band, this dude, no joke. He played guitar, and he had his like drums strapped to his elbows, and he was doing his thing. And you had, you know, people swallowing swords, and it was so cool. Back then, there was no police. Now they have a police station in Venice Beach. There was no police station, so it was really just aggro, just wild, just kind of crazy. And of course, there's a famous weightlifting thing right on the beach. Muscle Beach, they called it. And they had shirts, and you go there and you see these dudes with just these bodies that were just like chiseled to the core, and I'd just be like, whoa, dude, those guys are amazing. Like, what a beautiful body. And then you look over to the right and you got all these girls in like these bikinis, but they're not really on. Like, they're like missing most of the material. And you're like, you become, the culture tends to teach you lessons when you're growing up. It's amazing how much culture teaches you things. And so you're learning that the way I'm gonna be liked or fit into the planet, to my world, is if I do certain things a certain way. And I was a chubby kid. I know it's hard, you guys look at me today and you go, what? You know? But I was one of those chubby guys where when I was at the beach, I was always like, I was always like, I don't know. And then I tried to take off the shirt, but no way I was taking off that shirt, you know? It's just, I was embarrassed, you know? And so I don't know if you've ever seen the slideshow that I put up, but there's my friends that are on there that I still am in contact with. I always have put them on the slides over the years because I always want people to be praying for them. These are my friends that I'm still in contact with that don't know the Lord. But one of them is Joel Schur, who's played with Alanis Morissette for years. And I have real cool stories with me and Bo James and Alanis Morissette and Joel, and it's just really cool. And me and Joel, when we were kids, we were so concerned about, we knew we did not look right. He was another 3 inches taller than me, white dude, totally skinny, you know, as a kid. And I was just this kind of shorter, pudgy guy, you know what I mean? But we loved guitar. We played all the time. His dad owned a guitar shop, so we'd always went there. But you got to check this out. During the daytime when it was hot in the valley, in San Fernando Valley in Southern Cal, me and him would go out by the pool, you know, put on our bathing suits, take off our shirts, and we'd get all this tinfoil out, and we'd be like, oh, I think we gotta get tan, man. I think this is how you do it. You know, we get the baby lotion going. You know, you can just see us out there, dude, these like white as ever dudes, just, you know. But it was like that influence, that lie kept coming up to us of like, you know, this is how you're liked. This is how you're gonna be loved in your culture. And it's amazing, all of us are seeking that in our life. We're all seeking. If you really look at your heart and you look at why you do what you do and things like that, there's going to be a lot of insecurities you find in your heart and stuff that's just yucky. A lot of us don't even want to look in our heart because we're just going to see a lot of black, you know, we're going to go, ugh, you know, that kind of thing. So that's why I wanted to really choose this topic, because I just thought it was so good. It's kind of, people pleasing is kind of the flip side of envy. Envy is defined as a feeling of discontentment or resentment by another's qualities or possessions. That's envy. So a lot of us have envy, right, where we resent someone because they have a certain quality that we don't have, and we go, man, dude, I resent that. You know, I had a lot of envy when I was a kid because I would go to these concerts, and first of all, I saw all these dudes at the, you know, at these heavy metal concerts with long hair, and they looked, you know, awesomely like chicks, and that was cool in the culture back then. And I saw them with these girls, and I saw them playing guitar, and I saw all this music, and I thought, man, dude, I want to be like that. Like, why can't I be like that? Why don't I look like that? You know. And so as I got older, I developed this pattern of conformity to the world, right? And that's what people are doing all the time in our world, where they're being conformed into it. Whatever subculture, whatever genre that they're into, they're being conformed. Even though I would say, hey man, we do our own thing, really what I was doing is conforming to my little niche in my subculture in Southern California. So as I got older, I would start getting, you know, I was in the fifth grade when I pierced my right ear, or my left ear first. Because when you pierce the right ear, that meant something back in the day. And you were like, you don't do that. But then it became cool to have two. So the next year in sixth grade, I did the other one. And I was like the first one in my elementary school, because elementary school went to sixth grade, that had 2 ears pierced as a dude. And I thought, dude, I'm cool. You know, see how that works? Where you're looking for someone to like you. It's okay. Just I was so twisted, right? And then as I got older, I was very fortunate. I came to Jesus Christ. I count myself fortunate because tattoos came a little later on. And people get a lot of tattoos. And if you ask people why they get tattoos, they're going to be, because I like them. You know, I think they're cool. And that's cool. I mean, I understand that. You like them and things like that. But when you really chip away at why we get tattoos, there's something really pleasing about it to us. You know, just like getting a nose ring, or just like being able to play guitar well, or, you know, certain things. And what I've always found, it always comes back to this idea of, I really enjoy what people think of me, that they know I have a tattoo. You know, they go, whoa, like, you know, man, you got a tat? Where's that at? And I say fortunate because I was the type of guy that probably all my tats would have been horrible. You know, I would have got all those tats that were stupid tats, you know? They would have said horrible things. And, you know, I would have had to go on that show where they try to fix everything. You know, I'd be the poster child of that. Because I was into things, all kinds of things. I was into punk music. I was into Danzig. I was into all these different bands, Black Flag, metal music. I was into electronica. I was into so many different stuff, and that I was just everywhere. I was just into it all, where I could just see, and I was, you know, and I had a real bad view of sensuality and sexuality. And my view of women particularly was quite low. And so I probably would have put stuff on the skin that I would have felt really bad about. You know, I think of guys like Pastor Levi Lesko out of Montana, who, it's funny, it's like I don't understand guys like that, where they get tattoos like of Bible stuff. You know, like, oh man, I'm doing a Bible study. I'm going to put a tattoo of the Bible thing. Like, that's not my world. Like, my world was, you put tats on there that were going to be like statements. Like, I mean, like serious, like, you know, blank the government or something, just something in your face. You know what I mean? It was going to be just something real radical, you know? It wasn't like nice things. You don't put nice things on your skin, you know? So people-pleasing is different from envy in that people-pleasing is saying, I can't be happy unless I'm liked by others. Not that I have what they have, but it's that I won't be happy. My happiness is contingent on my ability to be liked by someone else. And it can hinder so many areas of your life. It can hinder God's ultimate plan for your life, in ministry, in your life. And your life is ministry. When I say ministry, I don't mean in ministry as in serving at a church or things like that. I mean, your life is ministry. If you are born again, if you're a Christian, your life is ministry. You are in ministry. Never think you're not in ministry. You are in ministry. It says you are a living epistle, meaning you are a book. You are read on by other people. So you're always in ministry. Never fall into the fallacy of, I want to be in ministry. No, you are in ministry. I never wanted to be in ministry. I knew I was in ministry right when I gave my life to Jesus Christ. When Scott came up to me and said, hey, I want you to work at the church, I thought he was weird. I thought it was weird. Because I was already in ministry, man. What do you mean, be in ministry? I am in ministry, you know. But you won't be able to understand the vision of God for you if you're too wrapped up in your life, if you're obsessed with the idea of people-pleasing. So, and I want to get into the practicalities of this. But at first, I want to talk about two promises and just read these out to you guys. One of them's an easy one to remember, Jeremiah 33:3. I think U2 actually put this on a cover of one of their albums. kind of in this really interesting area. They're in an airport, and if you look in the top, in the lights, like, you know, where the little marquee is, you see this little Jeremiah 33:3. And it's kind of this subliminal thing. I remember when it came out, everybody's like, whoa, U2 put Jeremiah 33:3 on their album, you know. U2 have a real big Christian influence. I don't know if you knew that back in the day, but it says, call unto me, and I will answer you, and I will show you great and mighty things which you knowest not. So it's a promise to Israel. God's going to do amazing things, mighty things. Even though you're down and out, even though you suck, even though you're a whore, even though you're totally prostituting, dude, God works on it. God's going to do something crazy in your life. And I can relate to that because I always feel like that, guys. I never feel like a clean, pure guy. I hate to tell you that. I always feel like, I don't know if you feel that way too, but I always feel like something's a little wrong with me. Like I'm not quite on the right track, you know? Like I'm a little bit, I'm on the railroad, you know? I'm on the rails, but I'm kind of in those cartoons that it's kind of, I'm tilted. You know what I mean? I'm riding on just one side, you know? I'm kind of not all the way down. At times I feel like I'm all the way down, and then other times I'm feeling like I'm on just my side going. And this passage tells me that God's going to work on you no matter what. Even you that's on your phone right now, God's going to work on you. the other passage is from Jeremiah 29:11. It says, for I know the plans I have for you, says the Lord. Plans for well-being and not for trouble, to give you a future and a hope. We know that passage all so well, but it's so good, right? In the midst of where you're down and out or where you're struggling, God's got these wonderful plans for you. And thing is for me, in order to trust those things, I'm going to have to deal with the people pleasing. I'm never going to really actualize and really trust that God has amazing plans for me if I'm too wrapped up in looking at what you guys think of me or what my friends think of me, people that are in my life, you know. And I loved my friends, I really did. And because it was a community. And we all love community. Hopefully that's what you love about church. And hopefully that's what you love about like even a group like this. Is that you love the people that are there. And you grow to enjoy them. And community is everything. You know, the reason why Alcoholics Anonymous is so big. Amazing. Dude, all over the world. Right? AA is everywhere. There's meetings every day in every city, almost in every town probably. There is an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, not just one, many. Right? In our town, they're all over the place. You can go to an AA meeting morning, noon, night, all over the place. It's amazing. I mean, it's just absolutely amazing work, that thing. But people get into community in there, right? And they start loving each other and they start listening to one another, to stories. See, you guys, hearing my story is going to help you. There's no doubt about it. But me hearing your story is important too. You know, I need to hear your story. And so that's why it's good sometimes we don't just have a guy up here talking, you know, so that I can hear you guys talk and I can go, man, Megan, I needed to hear that, man. That's for me because I'm no different from you. You know, we all have spiritual gifts and I understand that. But you understand what I'm saying, right? There's something to the community that's really important. And in the Bible, it tells us that. Hebrews 3:13, encourage one another daily, as it's called today. If your marriage, for the married people, if your marriage isn't a good community, then it sucks, right? Then you get home, you know, and you're like, the community of your house is a mess. For those of you who had parents that were kind of a little weird, right? You get home and the community's a little weird, right? Your house environment's a little trippy. You know, maybe you have an alcoholic parent. Maybe you have, you know, things. If the community isn't good, you know, sometimes we call it the vibe, right, in the community. then it creates a real difficulty to thrive, a real challenge. And so, you know, we need to encourage one another daily. In the early church, in the book of Acts chapter 2, 46, the early church met. Chapter 2, verse 46 of Acts, they met. And it says they met together, they took communion together, they fellowshiped together, they read the word together. Man, they loved, they worshiped the Lord together. You know, they were with each other. And that's what we're doing, right? And hopefully we continue to do that to help us grow, to help us be encouraged in God's plans and in his visions for us. It's normal to want people's attention, just so you guys know. It's not abnormal to want other people to like you and things like that. But for some reason, we have a sinful bent. Not for some reason, right? It's because we all know, you guys are smart enough to know, we have a sinful inclination that tends to take the natural instincts we have, which are good, and always bends it. The word iniquity is used in the Bible. It means to bend. And so that's what happens. So I have a natural desire to be liked, to enjoy community, fellowship. But for some reason in me, it always goes wrong where now I start finding my value in being liked. So now, have you ever known someone, maybe yourself, but maybe known someone who really their value comes from how people view them? And if people don't view them right, if they're not liked, then they can get into a depression. And this is the great warning that I want to give you guys today, is that there's a dark side to people pleasing. And that dark side is fear. It's fear from disapproval. It's fear of being criticized or rejected by people. It's fear, it looks like friends not liking you anymore. Things like that. And so you can fall into a real depression simply from this issue, from this problem. Again, Proverbs 29:25, I read it before. Fearing people is a dangerous trap, but trusting the Lord means safety. That's another version. And I like that one too. Fearing people is a dangerous trap. If I fear people, it's dangerous. It's going to get me in trouble. Now, let me read to you something Jesus said in John 14. This is pretty good. John 14, 26 through 27. He says, if anyone comes to me and does not hate his father and mother, wife and children, brothers and sisters, yes, his own life, he cannot be my disciple. And whoever does not bear his cross and come after me cannot be my disciple. Isn't that radical? That's a radical statement, right? Unless you hate mom and pop, you can't even hang with me. I mean, Jesus talks in these, what we call hyperbole all the time, really radical statements to really make people wake up. You know, so he's not saying, hey, dude, hate your family. But what he is saying to the culture is, dude, wake up. I'm God in human flesh and I'm here. And unless you value me above your family, then you can't really know what I have for you. You have to value me above others. And that's hard for a lot of people because they look at their mom and dad and their brothers and sisters as so, they want their attention or they want their approval so bad that they can't make the break. They're stuck in that fear of approval of parents where they can't in their brain go, you know what, mom and dad, you're cool, but you ain't that cool. You're not as cool as Jesus. You know, they can't make that break. And some people can't do that with their girlfriend. Some people can't do that with their boyfriend, their significant other, whatever. If you can't do that, then you're never going to get to knowing the value of Christ. Word? Say word. Okay, good. You're with me. Okay. So I always feel for my younger peeps over there. Okay, now I'm going to give you guys about five things that I want you guys to think about or you guys can write down, okay? People-pleasing will cause you to miss God's will for your life. So people-pleasing will cause you to miss God's will for your life. Why? Well, it makes sense, right? If our purpose is to please God and not people, And God's the one who examines our hearts, and he's the one who knows where we're at, but we're more concerned about people, then our focus is going to be off. We're going to miss something. So instead of seeing something that God has for me right up ahead, instead I'm focused on, I'm too worried about people. I tell you, the hardest thing really for me in the Christian life was saying bye to my friends, no doubt. I think that was probably the hardest thing for me to do. Because there was such a community, I loved it. I mean, I grew up with my friends. We all, played sports together, grew up going to Tijuana together, doing stuff like that, So it's like, even though we were doing a lot of stupid stuff, and, there's community that's being built. And there's a camaraderie, a love. A phileo, right? That you guys have been taught what that word means. A phileo that's being with each other, meaning brotherly love. And then we joined graffiti crews. And you get in graffiti crews and you're doing your sprays and then you're going back to the house and you're like, bro, did you see that? And things like that. And all that develops. Why do you think people join gangs? You think it's, a lot of people don't understand why people maybe join, but there's a feeling of togetherness in gangs. And someone's got your back. And I wasn't the biggest dude on the block, as you guys can imagine. And so going someplace and when fights would break out, knowing I had all these dudes on my side that were just zoo, 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 swinging, and I'd just be running, I wasn't the fighter, I was the runner, and I was the one who's always in the car driving. At one point, I got this like 1957 this boat, dude, where I could fit like 8 dudes, things like that, and it was just just crazy, but. But there's that community again that gets so into your heart that when now God calls you into a new life and he says, hey man, I've made all things new. Your sins are forgiven, bro. I got a new plan for you. And you're like, whoa, really? And then your friends are like, hey dude, let's go party. Right? And man, that hook just comes right out and gets stuck in your neck, right? And they start reeling it in. And then I had to unhook that thing like a movie, like Hellraiser, man, and just pull that thing out of my neck and literally just go, no. And it was hard. It's like I knew it was the right thing to do, and I had joy in Christ. I loved Christ, but it didn't mean it was easy. And some of you guys are there too, where there's such that desire to still please your friends that it's hard for you to see the things of God. The second thing is it can prevent your faith from growing. So for faith to grow, I need to be constantly stepping out in faith. I need to be constantly trusting God. But if I'm constantly looking to the approval of my friends, being a people pleaser, I will not step out. I'm not going to step out anymore. There's something that they're going to say that's going to hinder me from going. Me and Sylvia had the radical idea, this crazy idea when we were kids. We read the Bible, and people thought we were nuts, and we thought, man, it's better to marry than to burn with passion. Whoa, that's crazy, that passage. That's what we thought. We're like, dude, it says it's better to marry than to burn with passion. We need to get married. And our friends said, dude, you're nuts. My professors at school said you're crazy. My parents said you're nuts. Her parents said they were going to kill me. No joke. And didn't go to the wedding. Right? They were hardcore. And thing is me and Sylvia at that point could have went, you know what? Yeah. You guys, I understand. We want to be loved by you guys. We want to be well-pleasing to you all. We're not going to do it. And our friends would have been stoked. Because it was so funny when people stood up at our wedding because they were all kind of bummed. Everybody who stood at our wedding was kind of just like, and I don't think they were high, but they were all just kind of like, what the heck is he doing? Like, dude, what's going on? And Sylvia's friends were bent. They were mad. I mean, they were up there, but they were just kind of like, you know, what the heck's Sylvia doing? You know, because it's breaking up our party scene. It's breaking up our thing. You know, what we had going on, which was a whole lot of nothing, right? And so we have a decision to make, right? Am I going to go, I'm going to fear them and go, I'm going to do what they say, or are we going to trust God with it? You know, so it prevents my faith from growing. If I want to keep growing in faith, I have to learn to get my eyes off other people and onto God. So the third thing leads me to other sins. So people pleasing can lead you to other sins. Okay, and I'll put it this way. Reuben was part of the 12 tribes of Israel. Reuben, when his brother was being sold as a slave into Egypt, Joseph, what he did was, he knew it was wrong, but his other brothers, like Judah and the other dudes, were like, bro, come on, Reuben. Like, we got to do this. And Reuben's like, okay, I guess we got to do it. You know what I mean? He kind of got soft all of a sudden. He just, you know, I mean, here he's like, oh, yeah, we got to do something. Yeah, our brother's a jerk, you know. We don't like, you know, we're envying him for his position in the family and da-da-da-da-da. And they do something bad to their brother. They do it. But then after, you know, then he's kind of like, it's all soft. He's trying to please his brothers. You think of Aaron. Moses goes to the mountain to get the Ten Commandments, right? And what does Aaron do? He's worried about the people. The people are saying, hey, Aaron, dude, we want to worship something, and we want to throw the first outdoor rave, and it, you know, and so make a golden calf. We got the DJ. Do it for us. We're ready to go. And he does. And they throw a giant club. No joke. You thought Running Man was gnarly? I mean, Running Man, there was what was happening in the book of Exodus before the Running Man out in the desert. I don't even know if you guys know what Running Man is, but anyway, you guys have to look it up. Anyway, some of you guys know what's going on. But anyway, Running Man's this big desert thing. Some of my friends go out there, dude, and they get all weirded out. But anyway, it's a pretty interesting vibe out there. But you know what? But you see Aaron being influenced by the people, right? I made a list of some other people. Let me see if I can find it. The Pharisees, right? Jesus has to get on them because of the way they're acting. Why did they do what they did? Why did they kill Jesus? Because they feared losing their position, right? They were worried about their position and what the Roman government was thinking. And it says that at times they feared the people. So they were worried about what the people thought about them as religious people, as religious leaders. And that moved them to literally kill Jesus. That's how powerful those emotions were in them. So, meaning they had so much fear in rejection that fear of being rejected literally moved in them to murder. Whoa, dude, that's a hardcore emotion, right? You can see how this thing just goes. Saul is probably the best example. Famous passage in chapter 15 of the book of Samuel, where Samuel comes to Saul and says, hey, dude, why didn't you wipe out all the Amalekites? And finally, Saul comes to grips with not obeying God and wiping out these people, the Amalekites. And he says, I have sinned. And then he says, why? I was afraid of the people, and so I gave in to them. So you can see how That kind of living leads me to other sins. Meaning if you keep being a people pleaser, you know, it's just going to lead you into more sin and more sin and more sin and more sin down the line. So that's an area of your life you got to look at. So the fourth thing, people pleasing causes us to walk hypocritically, being politically correct, right? Hiding your true self. God knows your hearts. You know, it's funny. I can talk on being politically correct. This is so cool. April's up in Frisco, right? She's in high school in San Fran. I get an email from her school the other day, from Drew's school. And it says, hey, man, if you identify as colored, come to the inclusion colored lunch and you can take part, you know? And I'm just like, what does that mean? You know, so I call up, so, you know, and that's totally politically correct. I mean, you ain't gonna get more politically correct than San Francisco, okay? They have won the award, okay, in the United States of America on being politically correct. I mean, it is gnarly, right? Everything's inclusion, blah. I mean, that's all about that culture. So, of course, I get, hey, Zach, I get the email, and something in me is just upset, dude. I'm just like, what? Identify as colored? Like, that doesn't make any sense. Like, what does that mean? Like, so I call up my brother. I'm like, Jay, like, remember, we were raised secular atheists, so my brother's still a secular atheist. I'm the crazy one in the family that went, you know, born again crazy Christian. And so I go to my brother, and I'm like, JP, dude, what's up with this? Like, identify as colored. Does that mean that you can go? And he's like, oh yeah, I went one year. I'm like, really? And he's like, oh yeah, April can go too. And I'm like, really? So, and my brother's totally, like, he's San Francisco'd out. He's been there for 27 years, you know? And so, and I go, so, okay, you went? And he goes, oh yeah, but I can't go no more. And I'm like, why? He goes, because I'm white. And I'm like, what? Is that what they said? And they go, yeah. He goes, yeah. They told me not to come because I'm white. And then, he said, but you said that it's someone, if you even identify as colored. And then they said he was racist. And I said, they called you racist? And he's like, yeah. And I'm like, really? Dude, you are the most liberal bro. I mean, you are the most, you're like, there's left, and then there's left, and then there's left. You know what I mean? And my family is left. I mean, they thought Bill Clinton was a conservative president, you know? So yeah, my dad was, you know, Marxist, socialist, left. So calling my brother, my own brother's own people are calling him racist, you know? And he's like, yeah, I've been called sexist and racist. And I'm like, you? I'm like, this is, how can you be called that when you, this is your thing, you know? And, you know, but, you know, if I wanted to be loved by the people of San Francisco or by my brother, maybe I wouldn't say anything. You know, and sometimes we can be maybe too politically correct because of we're fearing people so much. And right, isn't that our culture today? We have a lot of that going on where a lot of people don't know how to talk to each other no more. It's like, you know, and I love the conversations. And believe me, I love talking about, I can talk about anything. Fluidity, whatever you want to talk about, I'm cool with. We can talk about it. And we can agree to disagree and we'll still hug and still be like, hey, I'm never going to argue and be mad at you or things like that. But you'll never be able to stand up for what you believe if you're too concerned about what other people think of you. Does that make some sense? Yeah, if you're too concerned about what other people think, you'll never ever share what you really believe. There's one thing I like about Zach a ton. There's more than one. But if there's one thing I do like about Zach, is I've always hung out with Zach for years now, but I always love that you have that I don't want to embarrass you, but I love how you have certain beliefs that you're just real strong in, you know, and you tend to be one of those guys where you're like, you'll say it no matter what, even when I think like, oh man, I don't know if I'd say that like that, you know. Zach tends to just come out and do it, you know. And there's a part of me that looks at that and goes, dude, that's great, you know. It's neat to, I mean, all people want to express themselves, you know, whatever view you have, you know. And that's what everybody's trying to do, is express themselves and say things. And we all have to understand that. It's just like, I don't have to get mad at someone because they have a different view than I do and be like, no, that's stupid, you're stupid, and then start shaming someone or things like that. It's ridiculous. It's like, I have views that I want to be able to express, and I hope that they're taken in a nice way, and, you know, a polite way at least. They can totally disagree with it. But wouldn't it be nice if we lived in a place that we didn't have to fear just saying what we believed? And we didn't have to fear someone looking at us and going, you're a jerk, I hate you. you know, you're this, you're that, and you're like, whoa, and all of a sudden, you know, we're all in this personal attack mode. So looking at people pleasing can really cause us to walk hypocritically to our convictions, to the things that we're convicted with in our heart. And so, and the last thing is people pleasing silences your life message. So people pleasing can silence your life message. So do you have dreams? Do you have desires for ministry? All those things. What is your dreams? What, you know, is people pleasing getting in the way from those dreams becoming a reality? Because you're worried. If I was worried about what my professors were going to say, I would have never declined my scholarship to finish my master's at the U of A. Because the professors gave me a scholarship. I was there. I was supposed to be there. And when they called me and said, "Where are you?" If I feared what they were gonna, what they were thinking of me, I would have said, "Okay, I'll be right there." But instead, I said, "You know what? I know it sounds crazy, but I'm declining my scholarship, and I'm gonna work in a warehouse for my child who's gonna be born, and I just want to serve in the church and help out this new church that's starting out." And hey, that sounded like nuts stuff. That was crazy. But I had dreams in my heart that God maybe one day was going to use me in a powerful way. He was going to do something crazy. And I would have never planned that this thing would have still been going 25 years later. You know what I mean? Never would have ever, ever, ever thought of it that way. I thought maybe we'd start something for maybe go a year. And then I thought, oh, maybe I'll go back to college. No, I was thinking that way. I thought, man, but God, wouldn't that be cool if you just did something crazy? And I would have these thoughts about that. Like, you know, maybe people are going to start coming here. Maybe me and Sylvia's life is going to be about you and about what you're doing and how we can help out young people and you know, be in people's lives and dedicate our life to this and, you know, those type of things. All of a sudden, me and Sylvia are talking weird. You know, and yet that's exactly what God had planned. But I had to tell my mom no, I had to tell my dad no, I had to tell the professors no, I had to tell my friends no. And so if you don't go those directions and say no, then your life message is going to be silenced, you know. So that's, I don't want to go too much longer. I could, because I always can, you know. But the easy fix is this, is we all have to get our eyes off of each other and the things around us, and we have to get our eyes on God. And that's easy said, but there's practicality to that. And what that means is there's something called solitude. You have to learn solitude. You need to learn to love being alone. And that's hard for a lot of us, and that's part of the people-pleasing thing, is we feel like our happiness is going to come from others. But God calls alone. He calls Moses alone. He calls Abraham alone. He calls Daniel alone. He takes his own son to the desert alone. Does that make sense? He calls alone because you need to know he's calling you. You need to know that. So you need to have those moments where you get with God. You learn to silence your life. You learn to shut things down. Shut them off, high school students. Shut them down. They're possessed by the devil and the guy from Hellraiser, Pinhead. All those dudes, you know. But you got to shut those things down so you can hear God. And then after you hear from God and you cry out to God, you seek him with all your heart, and then you learn to submit to God. You learn to just go, okay, man. And then you ask for the faith to step out and dream and do radical dreaming. If you would have said, Bo, you'd be a publisher, that you'd be on your second book, you've written two workbooks too, you would have had a nonprofit ministry for 12 years. You'd be helping people all over your town. You'd have two radio shows at one point. You'd go into all the schools, teach at Pima College, be an assistant pastor, hang out with college students. I mean, just all the variety of my life, I would have just said, wow, like, I don't know. I mean, that's just not my thing. I'm a guitar player, you know? But you conceive it in your mind, and you go, God, I have this heart for you. Give me a vision, give me and then give me the faith, the submission, and the solitude to be able to really seek it and go after it and trust the Lord. And he does amazing things, you know, and then those promises of Jeremiah come to pass, you know. So my book's still being written, as you guys know. So we don't know how it's going to go, and none of us do know everything about our lives, but all of our books are being written, so... As always, it's beautiful being with you guys. So I hope you got that. It's from my-